ball spark.
You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good, excuse me, Tuesday morning out there, western, northwestern Oklahoma. Welcome to Skinny on Sports on this muggy, muggy day. It's supposed to be 100 later on, once the clouds kind of move away and the fog gets out of here. So hydrate, stay cool out there today, because it's going to be a hot one. Coming up on the show today, Aaron Rodgers will not report. To minicamp, which is the first sign a holdout is looming. At that point, the team can start fining him. It is up to a possibility of a $93,000 fine the Packers could levy against Aaron Rodgers. My question is, should they? Will they? What would be kind of, would that be kind of the last straw? Is it too late? And so you might as well get your money if you're the Packers. Talk about that. Interesting story yesterday on Yahoo Sports. Pete Thamel had talked to some people. There's some meetings coming up here in the next 3 weeks concerning the future of the college football playoff. And according to Thamel, the folks that he's talked to within college football and around it, it appears a 12-team model is preferable. What does that look like? Does that make any sense? Where are we at with the college football playoff? Would not take effect at least for the next 2 years. But maybe in, what would that be? Let's see, 2023, possibility of a new format for crowning a champion in college football. We'll kind of talk about what that format looks like, pros and cons, and all kinds of stuff surrounding that. Also, we didn't really get into the OSU versus Bama. The one question that was on everybody's mind, you kind of mentioned it, but we didn't really talk about it. Will it be both current coaches, one of them, or neither? When that game is played in 2028 up in Stillwater. NBA playoffs last night, a couple of huge performances from some young guys. That Clippers-Jazz games, I don't know the answer. I've been looking for it all morning, and I can't find the answer to a question I have. But a huge crowd. Man, did you watch any of that or seen any of those highlights?
Clippers-Jazz.
No. That was the most
Skinny, I'm lucky that my remote didn't break last night.
Raucous. Yeah, we'll get to that too. It's right off the top. The most raucous crowd since, I don't know, the pandemic started for sure. I mean, that Utah crowd. Now, let's hope they weren't yelling.
Yeah, I was going to say the racial Utah
crowd. The racial things at people. But as far as just the energy and the, man, made you feel alive again, just tuning in. So we'll talk a little bit about the NBA playoffs. And, of course, the reason Jared's in a bad mood this morning and almost broke his TV last night.
I'm in a good mood.
Game one of the softball series did not go as planned for the Crimson and Cream. All right, so the Sooners lose game one, 8-4 last night in Oklahoma City. Fell behind by as many as 7 runs at 1.7 nothing. Battled back to a 7-4. Actually had the tying run at the plate with Grace Green. I was following along through Twitter, basically, because I was out at the little kid baseball games. So I'm going to lean on you to kind of tell everybody how that all went down and how the Sooners were unable to come away with the game one.
Well, when it snowballed, and I failed to realize when I said yesterday that, sure, OU, it seemed like their bats were coming alive. But, man, Florida State's bats came alive against Alabama. And I failed to realize that might continue, and it certainly did. I think the pitching matchup was not what OU needed. I think Gasso was leaning on May, hoping to edge out this first game and then go to G in the second game and wrap things up. So now it changes the plan. I think when OU got down 7-0, it wasn't a white flag because – when she gave up the home run, my phone started blowing up with fellow fans were saying, time to pull her. It's clearly not there. She walked off the leadoff. What inning was that?
Very first inning, I know they made the diving play in left field and doubled off a runner at second.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
With first and second, nobody out, is
right.
What I'm saying, though.
Yeah. That was probably the catch of the series, maybe even the season, because that was just, by Donahue, a fantastic play. And the Twitter sphere was saying, that could be the difference, man. That could have saved a run. Well, it turns out it really wasn't. But forget what inning was that the first home run was given up by May. But she left her in there hoping to get out of that jam, and then it just snowballed up to 7-0. And it made me wonder, did she say, you know what? They can't maybe Gasso, and this is very bold and brass of her, if this is how she's thinking. I don't think it's true. I might be a reach here, but she might be thinking, they can't beat us 2 out of 3 times. So I concede game one. We'll get out of this one licking our wounds and come back. But, man, you're really putting pressure on your team to win 2 in a row. Florida State, you got to give them credit, especially the freshman. Her name was on the tip of my tongue. The right fielder. Help me. Harding?
Harding, yes.
Yeah. She had the throw out early in the game. And, you know, they took back that momentum with that defense, like we mentioned about Donahue. And then she came up, step up to the plate after that leadoff walk and sent one out over left field. So she's a big reason why they won. And you got to give her, you know, can't blame youth, because youth won that game for Florida State, that freshman right there. So he's going to have to bounce back. They're going to put, I'm sure, G in the circle and see what they can do tonight. But pressure's on them. But they seem like they like that pressure. I mean, even throughout this World Series run, I mean, how many times did they get behind and they come back and win the game? You know, so when they got down last night, I thought, well, you know, they're bound to bounce back. And they almost, you know, they, like you said, they had that chance, the tying run at home down 7-4. But which I guess the most shocking thing to me was giving up the 7 runs like that.
It's interesting because
because that's not what they do, and that's. It just felt like, did she, being Gasso, say, you know what, I'm just going to leave her in there because I have – this one game can't lose it for us. And I have to, you know, plan ahead for game 2 and then hopefully 3.
No, I don't think there's any doubt that once you're behind
– that much.
4-0, then especially at 7-0.
Yeah.
You're not going to bring G. Juarez in there and
no.
Let him see her.
No, exactly.
Probably didn't really even want to do that with Sale, to be honest with you,
right.
But did. Once you score a few runs and you think, well, you know,
maybe
with our offense,
hold them, and then maybe the offense can do something.
And she did pretty well, gave up the solo shot in the 7th to make it 8-4. But, I mean, from what I could tell and watching some highlights, Florida State just kicked their tail.
They did.
It's just bottom line.
You
got to
give Florida State a lot of credit, a lot of aggressiveness that they used, and they just did not let up. And because they knew, yeah, we can't let up because this team, you can blink and they score 6 runs in an inning. So you can't let – so that, you know, give them a lot of credit, and I am. And
here's the question and all that. How much criticism / questioning / whatever you want to say about it does Patty Gasso deserve here for – it's a 3-game series.
Right.
And to me, game one is vitally important.
Well,
in
statistically, you take game one, you got to you well, have a real good. Do you have it in front of you?
Since 2005, when this became a 3-game series, only 3 times has the team that lost game one come back to win.
There you go.
Ironically, OU was one of those teams that was vanquished after winning game one in 2012 by Bama. The very first year of it, Michigan came back to beat UCLA, and in 2007, Arizona beat Tennessee. So since 2007, it's happened once.
But isn't this a series this particular year? Of the team to come back. I mean, we got 2 teams that
have come back
the losers bracket.
I mean, that's
it's just kind of falls into the theme of things. But
it's the optimistic viewpoint if you're an Oklahoma fan coming
of
off a tail kicking.
But back to your original question, then
is she? Are we allowed? Because here's the thing: she did this exact same maneuver in the Super Regionals, and it worked by starting May.
Right.
Instead of either, at that time, really kind of Sale.
Sale would kind of stepped up. But
right.
Yeah, she started in May.
Started May, and it was a 4-2 win. And a little bit shaky, but the bats got just enough of Gabby playing, and here we are. So, you know, when you've been that successful, I guess, and it's so funny. It is so funny to read things online, social media, even talking to people about how, I mean, the benefit of the doubt that Patty Gasco gets. And listen, I'm not saying she doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
But there's no way in hell the football coach gets this treatment.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still people that think Paul Thompson should have played against LSU right. instead of the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
A redshirt freshman. That guy's redshirting.
Yeah.
There's still people that stupid out there. Yeah. So it's just so funny that, it, you know, listen, everybody that's an OU fan becomes a softball fan for about 3 weeks in late May and early June every year.
I'd like to say,
but there's a whole. But now listen, there's some that are. But all of a sudden, it's this giant fan base at the end of the year, and
they scratching their heads, go, "Why did she do that?" What questioning?
But they don't. That's the thing, though. They don't. They don't question.
They don't. Yeah, they
because there is that. Okay, well, I don't watch, and this is actually kind of shocking for OU fans to not just think they know everything about everything. To be quite honest, but it is like they go. Well, hell, you know, I don't really know that much about softball. I guess whatever Patty says goes.
Right. And like it's those shirts that the alumni are wearing, and Patty, we trust.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like, yeah. Okay, well, you know. But here's the truth of it. If you think that, yet think you're the offensive or defensive coordinator and smarter than them, stop it. Exactly. Go to the
Please.
Patty part of this.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, and there's people yelling at the radio, "Won't you guys shut up?"
Promise you. My God, I do know more than Alex Grinch. What are you talking about?
But I back to your original question, it's going to work out one or the other way with her. If she comes out and you know she's and I'm assuming she's going to start G tonight, and let's say she comes out and gives up a couple hits, one run, and OU wins 6-1, and then they turn around on Thursday and win this thing, she's going to look like a genius. I'm like, well, that's why she left May in there that long on almost said Monday, Tuesday. That's what's throwing my days off.
Yeah.
I feel like last night should have been Monday with the game one. But if it doesn't, then people might start, well, why did she do it like that? And then she can just turn around and say, well, I don't see you getting your teams to the World Series every year.
Yeah, and that's the truth. I mean, the
you
truth
know,
of
but,
it is.
You know, but Nick Saban gets it for any time he gets to a national title game and he loses, you know, and there's
those
all
were the days. Remember how fun those
oh,
were?
Oh, man, yeah. But people, you know, that's just the nature of the beast as being
it
a
is.
Head coach, one of the most successful head coaches in your sport. You're going to get praise for everything that works right for you and high criticism for stuff that doesn't work for you.
That's right.
But that was the point of conversation after the game. I had two or three people text me saying, this is on Gasso. And, you know, at that point I was mad. I was like, yeah, I feel like it might be, but then I kind of took it back after I sent that text. Like, you know what? Let's wait and see. And then we could say it's on her or you know, just it is what it is. Well, Florida State's probably just a better team.
When it's 7-0 at the end of the – or in the bottom of the fourth inning, I don't know that's the coach's fault.
That's a good point.
It's just at some point, I mean, we could question the decision to start her, but at some point you got to do one of two things. Either, hey, your kids didn't show up, or B, give credit to the other team.
Yeah.
And Florida State was clearly the better team yesterday.
The thing I've noticed about OU, and it particularly in this World Series, their bats, it takes them like almost a full round through the lineup mm-hmm. to come alive. And I get that. You're seeing the pitcher for the first time. You're relaying to your other teammates what she's doing, what she's not doing, look for this, look for that on 0-2, whatever. But that's not what OU's accustomed to all season long. If you did not tune into a game if you didn't sit down and get ready for first pitch, if you tuned in second, third inning, it's already 5-0. And that's so credit the opponents, JMU, UCLA. And Florida State, you know, they coming out early and putting the pressure on OU, but then OU's bats would come alive later. Last night, credit Florida State for getting up 7-0 because they knew 2-0's not going to do it. You know, imagine if 2-0 held up. All of a sudden, we're talking about a 4-2 win, right? They did not let up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can fault OU. It's like, you got to get those bats going a lot earlier.
Well, that's what
first pitch swinging, maybe, you know, be aggressive. And that's what Florida State was. They were very aggressive last night.
That's what Gasso said. You can't wait.
No.
You can't just sit back and wait. Not swinging very loose, not quite ready. You got to be ready to go from the first pitch.
Yeah.
And the truth of it is, with the way that they can hit, You know, they're even last night at 7-0, and you're still kind of thinking, well,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
we got 7-4, and then they're up there with okay. the two runners on, and it's 7-4. You're yeah. like, oh, well, here they go.
Yep. Hey,
Grace Greed's probably going to get a home run, and then it's 7-7, and who knows, you know, after yeah. that. But it'll be interesting tonight. I mean, it would be plumb shocking, right, if it's not Juarez on the mound for OU or in the yeah. circle, I guess.
Yeah.
That would be plumb shocking.
Yeah, it's win or go home, do or die. So I expect her in there because she's – been the best pitcher this past week for OU. You expect her to be in there, and I expect, just like we talked about, when Gasso says it, you know, usually what's another thing we've seen? When she says stuff, it happens.
Yeah,
when
in
she
Oklahoma,
doesn't like late games, and all of a sudden we're not having late games. So I expect more aggression to set
Oklahoma will be the road team. Yep. I would expect a lot more aggression in that first inning from those top three. And here's the, you know, they've had some different highlights, but those top three in the order haven't been as dominant,
right.
which that's to be expected, I suppose. You know, Jennings just hasn't quite been there. You know, those balls that have been going out of the park, you know, especially for Allo there in the game early against James Madison, the winner go home game, mm-hmm. we're getting to the warning track, and you thought, man, just missed.
Yeah.
It's that the way, it, you know, so – we'll see tonight, but I just like when Oklahoma lost the James Madison game, I'm not ready to sit here and pour dirt on the grave by any stretch.
Oh, no.
But it's certainly not going to be the cakewalk
this
that a lot of people thought it might be.
Sure, it's a championship series, but this isn't like the first time this past week that they've had their backs against the wall. They've played this entire series with their backs against the wall, but so has Florida State.
That's true.
So,
yeah, now it's going to be interesting to see
now you got
how
both,
Florida State
yeah.
reacts being in – a good position
right. yeah.
instead
knowing
of a bad
that
one.
They can give
yeah.
this one up yeah. and still have a chance to win it on Thursday. But yeah, usually you get a tiger in the corner and they're going to come out slashing. And so OU, I expect to be really, really aggressive.
Yeah, I think so too.
But with that usually comes you got to be aggressive and smart. And sometimes when you're too aggressive, you're not too smart. Got to, you know, like the base running last night. So
yeah, both teams kind of that way.
Yeah,
you know, Florida State has been aggressive. It bit them in the first inning with the diving catch out there by Donahue. But you know, OU got a player thrown out at third for the third out, home.
Yeah,
aggression, that's fine, but
you got to be smart.
Got to be smart
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
Interesting point on the text, and I think Dakota's dead on. Juarez needs to be flawless with as little amount of pitches thrown as possible. That way, maybe she can be strong for three or four in the event there is that if game on Thursday.
Yeah, you can't have those long at-bats where suddenly you get ahead of them 0-2 and foul ball, foul ball, foul ball. Then you miss outside and you miss down low, and then that's just an extended at-bat. And then the worst case. And that was the thing when May walked that leadoff runner that led to the home run that made it 2-0. That at-bat I lost count on the pitches. But she got ahead, but then she lost her.
Mm-hmm.
And then there we go.
Yeah, if ever there was a time for a five-inning run rule, it would be tonight
well,
to save G. Juarez's arm.
Unfortunately, you don't have run rules in the championship.
Oh, you
series.
Don't?
No.
Oh, well, that sucks. Never mind.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Nope. Just get ahead
okay,
real quick
get ahead
and then
20,
get her out.
Get ahead 20 to nothing
yeah.
and throw whoever else
out.
You want.
Because yeah.
can't they come back in? Can't you,
you
re-enter?
Can re-enter?
That's
you
what
can.
I thought.
Yeah.
So there you go. NBA playoffs last night. Philly tied up their series against Atlanta, 118-102. Joel Embiid had 40.
Heard this said yesterday, would that feel like a must-win for Philly?
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, I don't know what, I think the line was in the 6.5 range. Looking back, that was such easy money. Because there's no way Atlanta is just going to go in there and sweep Philly.
Oh, no.
And you're right, it wasn't. They were the most desperate team playing the second game, down 0-1 on their home court. And Embiid was awesome with 40. So that's 1-1 going back to Atlanta. Game one of that Clippers-Jazz series was a doozy. We talked yesterday about how the games haven't been close in the playoffs. This one was a pretty great effort, I think, by the Clippers coming off that tough seven-game series. But it's pretty easy to go in there and fold up your tent.
Yeah.
Just kind of accept that you lose game one, try to steal game two, and then you know, wrestle home court away from the Jazz. Instead, they were in it to the end, had a chance to win before Donovan Mitchell kind of put the nail in the coffin. Gobert blocked a shot to seal game one for the Jazz, 112-109. Mitchell had 45. Listen to this. This is nuts. That's his fourth 40-point playoff game in his career, which ties the mailman, Karl Malone, for most in Jazz history.
My goodness.
It took Mitchell 28 playoff games versus Karl Malone's 149.
Let's say Mitchell,
and we're not talking about some slouch. Karl Malone's like, what, the second leading scorer in the history of the league?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy number. I mean, I think Jason Tatum tied Larry Bird with 50-point games as a Celtic in such a small window of time versus all the years that Bird was there. But Mitchell was fabulous. The one thing I take out of this game, looking at the stats, and I was trying to find this, and I couldn't find it before the show. Do you think there's ever been a playoff series in the NBA where for the two teams, their shot attempts combined, over half of them were from three? That can't have ever happened, right?
You almost want to say maybe in a series involving Golden State during their high-flying
days. See, it's funny you say that, because they're not even in anywhere near the team individual attempts champion. You know who that was? You know who it is? Or I guess it was, because the team's different now.
No, who?
Houston. And specifically 2020 Houston.
Huh.
2020 Houston has five of the top six individual team attempts in the history of the playoffs. And going into this year's playoffs, they had every five.
Yeah.
Three of those five were against Oklahoma City in that series last year, including the top two of 58 and 56 attempts. Last night, the Clippers were 42 of 85 in attempts. 42 of their attempts were threes of their 85 shots, so 49%. The Jazz were way higher, 50 of their 91. So they combined for 92 of the 176 shots were from three, 52% of the shots. I can't think that's ever happened. Because Houston's firing them up probably 58 of their 90 attempts or 100 attempts, something like that. But Oklahoma City would have still had to shoot a pretty high clip too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that has to happen over seven games. So I don't know if that's ever happened, but it's probably going to here. I mean, this comes down to Kansas Jazz. That's the way they played all year, though. Live by the three, die by the three.
Yeah.
Last night they were able to live. And that crowd was awesome, I'm telling you.
So, we've been disappointed with playoffs. That was a conversation yesterday, and I said, you know, is it going to take us to get ladder in the playoffs, you know, to get to these later rounds? And you know, I even just suggested the conference championship round. And maybe now, you know, we're seeing the competition get better. We're going to start seeing better games like we saw Jazz Clippers last night and even a little bit of Philly and Atlanta.
I think we have two good ones in the West. I thought we were going to have one good one in the East and then one with Atlanta, Philly, kind of, okay, whatever. But the way Brooklyn's been, that one's been terrible so far.
Yeah, that will be terrible. But I think Philly, Atlanta has a potential to go seven.
I don't. No way.
You think Philly just going to pull away?
Yeah. Five or six.
Burrito?
What, did it go seven? I'll take
What do you think?
I'll take
I want a solid number.
I'll take under six and a half.
Come on. We're not picking a winner. Just pick a number. Come
six.
On. You say six?
Six game series.
I'll go seven.
And I think it's really five. I don't know that Atlanta wins another game.
Be confident. Say five.
Why? When I can get six and still look smarter if it's five.
I say seven.
No chance.
Okay.
All right, burrito bet.
All right.
Now, the Western Conference series, I think both of those are going to be fun.
Lakers, yes, I do too.
With the Suns and also the Nuggets as the other. And, you keep thinking, come on, Bucks, win game three. And hopefully game four, get this thing.
Make it fun for us.
Don't you want to see those guys with the Nets have a little stress?
Yes.
Just to see what they're made of?
Yes.
With those personalities? I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance Harden doesn't play the rest of this series and doesn't have to.
That's the scary part.
But wouldn't it be nice to see a little bickering between Durant and Kyrie just to see what they're made of?
Yeah.
And I thought Milwaukee would have a chance to do it. My gosh, they're just getting killed.
No, that coach will be fired.
Oh, for sure. Of course,
and
when you fire out your zone against that team.
That's so dumb.
Do you know what the Nets – are shooting 50-50-90 in the playoffs. You know what that means?
50-50-90.
That's as a team.
Is it 50%?
Field goals, 50% three, 90% free throws. That's a hell of a season that I don't think's ever happened for an individual player.
Listen, knock them all you want for building a super team, but when you're actually performing, that's hard to knock, right? Numbers don't lie.
This is going to be incredibly unlikable here. But you know the key to a successful super team right now?
The snake.
Having Kevin Durant on it.
Yeah.
He's so flexible. And he's so awesome. He's the best player in the league. I said it yesterday. And it's really not close because he doesn't get the credit for the defense he plays. And his efficiency, my Lord, it's off the charts.
The world wants to see him do it by himself. I think that's the thing.
He's unbelievable.
That's just my opinion. Hey, we need to give a shout-out to all the basketball teams in town. Team Camp. You seen them everywhere? Have you seen them?
Yes.
I said, man, how many? Everywhere I see, look, there's a bus. You know, I'm not talking just from across the county. I've seen Hooker in town, Plainview. I saw them roll through, and I think they're utilizing other neighboring gyms,
too. Yeah, it seems like they normally do.
I've seen a few over in Canute. Who else did I see? I think I saw Duke. And they're using every place that has a hoop. If you have a hoop in your backyard, they're probably going to be practicing on it in Elk City. It's pretty cool, though. It's always been a big deal. Did you ever attend that?
No.
I did. You know what I remember from that?
What?
It was hot. Yeah, it was a hot. And today's going to be no different. I think they're here tomorrow, too.
Yeah, I think my little niece is involved in the junior high portion of that.
Cool.
Right now, as we speak.
It's pretty cool, though.
She was getting to ride the bus. Had to be at the bus, leaving at 7:30. Also, up at Kicking Bird.
Kicking Bird.
Kicking Bird Golf Club. They're about to go through a gigantic renovation.
Oh, yeah?
At the end of the month. Starting the end of the month, going to be closed for like 18 months. But before then, the OGA Junior Boys and Girls State Championships are being held. The stroke play portion of that is over. And match play starts this morning. The royalty of high school golf played well again. You know who I'm talking about?
The royalty.
Yes. The royal couple of high school golf.
Remind me.
Trace Hill from Elk City just graduated. He was second, tied second in the stroke play portion, and his girlfriend, one Maddie Camus from Kingfisher, is the winner. Maddie shot 6 under for two rounds, 69-65, to be the girls' stroke play champion. Andrew Goodman, who was also an individual state champion, 9 under, 67-64, two better than Trace. I think Trace shot 69-64 for his two rounds. And so they start stroke play now. But those two, yeah, they date each other. They both won the 4A individual championship, now playing good up there.
Do they roll out the red carpet?
Both going to OCU. Yeah, they probably have like a king and like a crown and stuff. The only problem for Trace is Maddie's maybe a little taller.
Oh, boy.
Wham.
Wow.
How do we feel about that? Hey, it's just truth. It's just truth.
Knocking a kid. He can't even get back at you.
Yeah, I know. It's even best, huh? 10:34. Trace.
I'll hear about it tomorrow.
Also, not only Trace Hill, but also Ryder Cowan, former Elk Cityan.
Yep.
He is in the top 16 as well. So Ryder starts his match at 10:27. Trace right behind him at 10:34. So we'll monitor that, the OGA Junior Boys and Girls Championship from up at Kicking Bird Golf Club. All right, so did you get a chance to read this article from Pete Thamel?
I when I got home, and speaking of royalty, sat down on my throne, it started reading. I read some of it, and then I was interrupted by dad duties. But then I started reading it this morning. I read over it again. So yes, I got a good chunk of it. Yeah.
I almost died right here on the air.
I thought you were laughing.
I started to laugh, then I started to cough, then I started to choke, all at the same time.
Oh, man. Sorry about that.
So basically in the next 3 weeks, there's going to be a couple of different meetings.
Right.
And everything, there's been a kind of a committee tasked with doing all the research, the different ideas, the different, you know, formats of what the college football playoff will look like in the future. I think it's fairly safe to, I shouldn't say that, but it feels like it's fairly safe to say that there is going to be some sort of expansion.
Yeah, it's inevitable.
I think it is, just because the money's going to be so big. And
right.
And with COVID, you know, this is a way to recoup some of those losses for the schools, athletic departments and whatnot.
Yeah.
So at the moment, you know, the meeting, I think the first one's next week and the other one's the week after. And then everyone convenes, and like the official or specific recommendation is made by this committee to the larger kind of college football playoff committee that can then start going and having meetings and trying to really nail down all the specifics, which would be, you know, the micro details outside of the macro plan. So as Pete Thamel's been talking to some people, he gets the sense that the momentum throughout the decision-making wings, and there's, you know, it could be ADs, it could be presidents, it could be the TV people, conference commissioners, what have you, that it's really, the momentum is really trending toward a 12-team playoff.
Right. So how would that work? Like, top four get a bye?
All those details haven't really even been talked about necessarily, but everyone's got their idea. Basically, the 12 teams would be the five conference champs, one group of five, and then six. So those are guaranteed. Those six are guaranteed spots. And then six at-larges. Could be other group of fives, could be, you know, non-conference champs from the big conferences. Who knows? A lot of the reason why it looks like that is favored over, say, eight teams is, one, more the merrier. You know, you're not going to exclude any conference champs in 8-team either. But the downside in a lot of these people's minds over an 8-team playoff is that right now all four selections are considered at large.
Sure.
No one is guaranteed a spot.
Right.
Now, that's kind of funny to say, because it feels like the SEC champ is guaranteed a spot. We haven't seen it get to a three loss
champ
to really test that theory.
Right.
But in practice, all four are at larges. An 8-team playoff, either way you slice it, you're going to have five conference champs. So at the most, you're eliminating one of those at-large spots down to three, possibly even two of them, if you include a guarantee for one of those group of five teams in the 8-teamer. Who does that not interest as much as say, the current model or the 12 team? Well, two entities in particular, one, the SEC, two, Notre Dame, because that takes a spot or two possibility away from them, whereas the 12 teams, there's six of those spots available for Notre Dame and for extra SEC teams. Now, who would enjoy that 8-teamer? Pretty simple. The Pac-12, because they would get somebody guaranteed.
Right.
And then possibly the group of five, because maybe they get a guarantee, or at least a nod of, if you have somebody, maybe it's not guaranteed, but if you have somebody, say a Cincinnati this year, we'll probably get them in.
Yeah.
Now, the 12-teamer, they would clearly be for, because that does guarantee one of those teams to get in there. I think they're really interesting formats. You know, I know that right now it does feel like it's getting kind of stale, because the teams are the same, because the just the amount of spots that are available. And we both know that there's really no chance of any Cinderella story in college football the way it's currently conducted the playoffs.
Here's the thing. An unpopular opinion, but I kind of want 8 and not 12.
Okay, why?
Because if we go 12, you know what I like I like about every, what, 4 or 5 years we have discussion of conference expansion. And I know it feels like we're on the road to go to super conferences and everything. But if we go to 12, then the chances of a BYU joining the Big 12 or BYU joining the Pac-12, teams like that, you know, the Big 12 dipping into the state of Florida with, you know, Central Florida or somebody, it feels like that will go away. And I don't know. I like that idea of bringing in new blood to conferences. I think you go to 12 teams, that completely stops. And that's just off the top of my head. But I could see the 12 team. I mean, I see benefits from both sides of it. You know, I get it with the 4-team thing. Can we stop with the crying? Because you're the 5th team out. You know, we should have been in. We got to expand it. So what happens when we expand it, and then if it goes to 8-team and you're the 9th team out? Oh, well, you should have got in. Let's expand it. When does it stop?
Yeah, that's the
does
one.
Does it stop at 12? Okay, what if Notre Dame doesn't make the top 12? Is Harbaugh going to go crazy?
Yeah, but he's not the one griping.
I know, but my point is, I mean, when does it stop?
Well, that's the problem with expanding it from 2. Was where does it end? I mean, does it get to 32? Does it get to 16? You know, at what point? I mean, I think for me as a college football fan, the goal is to avoid at all costs what's happened to college basketball. And that means nobody gives a damn until the tournament starts.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
No.
Now, I am for getting more and, you know, buy-in from the whole country, because right now it feels like outside of Ohio State and Notre Dame every 3 or 4 years, no one cares south of what? Oklahoma? I mean, north of Oklahoma, I mean.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of people south of Oklahoma that care.
No one cares north of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Outside of Columbus, Ohio, and South Bend, Indiana. It's all down here, and it's such a regionalized sport.
Or anybody west of the Rockies, you know.
The west of Norman.
Good point.
I mean, it's just the way it's been. And the advantage to being able to expand is that those conference title games take on a whole new meaning.
Sure they do. Yeah. And I like the automatic.
That takes on a huge level of importance. I mean, it literally is a play-in game.
Yeah.
And so then when you get – I mean, but that's just the breaks, right? I mean, we see that in the conference basketball tournaments when a team that's dominated, especially from the smaller conferences, loses in the tournament, and guess what? They lose out in the big field. That's a potential problem, but at the same time, I don't think it is. Because if you sacrifice – Oklahoma to get, you know, say Ames, Iowa, more involved, then you've got two play. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's so much, and then you get the West Coast back involved in college football because, let's be honest, outside of the one Oregon-Utah year a couple years ago, the West Coast has been out Labor Day.
Yeah.
The way some of those games have turned out.
Yeah.
And that's not good for the health of a sport that is going to need money moving forward.
Does a 12-team playoff, does it kill mediocre bowls?
I mean, hell, it seems like the 4-team playoff has already killed the big bowls.
We're already seeing players opt out.
Well, that's the huge advantage, I think, to a 12 versus an 8.
You get a lot of players staying in.
Not near as many people.
I can see that.
Because think of look at what happened. I mean, the Sugar Bowl is one of the top 4 bowls that there's ever been. Half of Florida's team didn't play. It doesn't mean anything to them.
Cotton Bowl.
Because it – or Cotton, whatever.
Yeah. Well, Cotton Bowl's up there too.
Yeah, I mean –
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it I'm just used to the SEC and Sugar Bowl.
Me too.
But, it, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It didn't matter to anybody. Now, if that's a playoff game
– Oh, yeah.
Which would have been – those people don't – Kyle Pitts ain't sitting out.
Right.
And
imagine
so,
if it was a playoff game, if it was a 12-team playoff this past season. Who was it? What everybody said was the hottest team going at the end of the year?
Yeah, we'd have found out.
Oklahoma, we would have really seen. Are they? Were they?
So the way this look, the way this 12-teamer is, you talked about, like, how would it look. There's no real concrete plan at the moment. But and I think the same thing holds true outside of the buys for an 8-teamer. The first-round games will be played on the campus of the highest seed. So in the 12-team, the top four get buys into the second round. 5 through 8 host 9 through 12 in the descending order. 5 to 12, mm-hmm. you know, and so on and so forth. 6, 11. The one problem about that that I think the big dogs are going to have, hey, thanks for the buy, but what about the money we're missing out on hosting a playoff game?
Yeah.
So then does that lead to the, well, then we need 16?
Oh, dear.
Or does that go back to 8? Here's the problem. With the from the people that he talked to in this article, it feels like there's less momentum for 8 than there is to stay at 4.
So it's either 4 or 12.
So that kind of seems like right now the way that they're leaning. Now, could there be, you know, compromises made or what have you? 8 seems, has always seemed like the best model. Because you still have the guarantees. You still keep people involved in the conference championship races to the championship games. You keep the whole country watching college football. But you don't water it down. That's the only thing about just adding 4 more teams. We're going to add 3 more SEC teams and one of the big dogs that got left out? Let's not kid ourselves. We're not going to add, you know, this year, it's not going to be Cincinnati getting the automatic, the Coastal, and whoever else firing into those at-large, but that's not the way it's going to work. No. We all know it's not.
No.
So it's just another way to get another SEC or two teams into that at-large discussion, and it'll benefit the other conferences as well.
You know, with automatic bids, the plus side I can see is, you know, imagine like OU had the season last year where they got 2 losses out of the gate. You know, there were a lot of people who just gave up on them. OU fans included, like, well, you know, Big 12 title's still in play, but we know the playoffs aren't.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And,
well,
and but it gives
that it keeps that incentive. Hey, guys, there's still a chance. We're 1-2, but we can still win this conference and get in the playoffs, and who knows?
And it does, for the first time ever, give teams a chance to actually grow through the season and still have a chance to compete for a national title. That's never been the case in college football. You just can't overcome those losses. This does give you that chance. Think about some of those USC teams back in the mid-2000s, outside of the Bush Leinart ones, even after that, where you suffer kind of an early conference loss. By the end, it feels like, oh my gosh, this is the best team for sure, but has no chance to get into the title game because of a couple of early nicks, conference champs and all that, and then just beat the hell out of somebody in the Rose Bowl, and you go, wow, wonder if they could have beat, you know, Florida or LSU or, you know, whoever else it was. That gives that opportunity there for teams such as that. And OU is definitely in that discussion this year for one that, you know, for a variety of different reasons, started slow but ended with a bang. And either one, the 8 or the 12, would give those teams like that a chance to legitimately compete for a national title.
Yep. It's interesting to see what comes of this.
Yeah, I feel like we'll know in 2 or 3 weeks kind of what the recommendation is going to be. I really don't think you'll know. There will be a plan, but then I think that the minute details will have to be worked out sometime during the season, we'll probably hear. And like I said, 2 years or 2023 would be the earliest that we would see this.
You know, one thing we didn't talk about, the TV deals. Got the suspend the Aaron Rodgers convo tomorrow.
Yeah, so let's talk about the TV part of this in any expanded playoff. So I think that my snap mind goes to, okay, ESPN will have it, you know, however, you know, they put the championship game or depending on when the games are, ABC will probably have one, you know, but it'll be an ESPN venture.
Yeah.
Two questions about that are, one, how much will it make it tougher financially for ESPN because of the giant contract they just need to have the SEC? CBS in 2 years, I believe, that the CBS afternoon SEC game will be no more.
Right.
They were outbid. ESPN owns the rights to the SEC coming up in, I think, 2 years. So how much will that financial amount deter ESPN? And number two, and maybe more importantly, because I don't know if number one is even really the case. I'll just throw money at it. But number two, if Fox is serious about jumping into the college football game, which it appears that they are, is this not their chance to really, really make a splash by saying, it's ours, we're paying for it, we are the network of college football playoff now?
Yeah, this is going to be a bidding war. Yeah, and if anybody wants a 12-team or more, it's those guys, right? To have as many games as possible to broadcast, to make money off of. Oh, yeah, they're loving this idea. But, yeah, I think Fox, it's going to be down between Fox and ESPN. I can't see CBS jumping too much into the mix.
No, the one thing about Fox and ESPN both is they have those multiple networks.
Right.
In order to show games. Now, the problem for Fox that I could potentially see here is the NFL playoffs. But, you know, that wild card weekend, let's think, how does that go? NBC has a game. CBS has a game. ABC has, you know what I'm, ESPN, yeah. I can't remember. I know Fox has probably a game a day on Saturday and Sunday. So how does that, you know, go into the mix? But by that time, depending on the dates, are they not needing the full inventory of, you know, three games or whatever in a day? You know, how does that all work? And it you know, to me, it would sure seem weird for college football at that point, because you're so used to the bowl games and they're being boom, boom, boom. They're all on at the same time, especially right. January 1st.
Oh, yeah.
Sure seem weird to have, you know, one game, all the attention focused on this one, then go to this one, then go to this one.
No, I think at the earlier rounds, there are going to be multiple games happening at the same time. So that goes to think that,
I mean,
maybe,
almost have to.
Yeah, I almost think that there could be a split deal where ESPN and Fox, they get X amount of games. Maybe you know what I mean?
But if you're Fox, wouldn't you want to get them all?
Oh, they both want them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, money is money. But at most, you'd only have four games in one day. Or.
Yeah.
Could you.
I mean, you're going to start seeing 11 a.m. playoff games.
Well, or could you have two on Saturday, two on Sunday?
Yeah.
Well, Fox couldn't do it that way because they've got the NFL.
Right. That's what I'm saying is you could see, okay, these
games. Or you do
games
two Friday, two Saturday, you know.
Yeah. But I can see both networks getting them.
Yeah, for a first round, and then it kind of goes down to one.
And then it's the championship game is what they're really bidding on. Okay, Fox gets them for the championship game for the first 5 years, you know, or whatever. ESPN gets them for the next 5 years. But the early round games I can see being on both networks.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
At the end of the day, they're going to be the winners on this thing.
Oh, yeah, it's all about money.
Oh, sure.
If it wasn't all about money, we'd still be playing the Orange Bowl champ, doesn't care about who the Sugar Bowl champ is, doesn't care about the Rose Bowl and the Cotton Bowl. Nobody could care.
Yeah.
You'd play your own game, and then everybody would dream up a national champion. It's going to be awesome to see.
It's going to be interesting to see what comes of this.
No doubt. Everybody have a great day.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered.